was here down here.
Testing the mic, testing the mic.
Let the record show, we have Representative Capsler, Representative Harris, Representative Elkin, and Chairman Thomas present. What we're going to do today is, we have a CS in... Let the record show, we have Representative Capsler, Representative Harris, Representative Elkin, and Chairman Thomas present. What we're going to do today is, we have a CS in front of us. We'll adopt the CS. Have the sponsor make comments on it. Point, counterpoint, how's that? Comments, and then we'll open to public testimony, and then bring the bill back, close public testimony, bring it to the committee, and see what the wish of the committee will be. So at this time, is there a motion to adopt the CS?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt for consideration CS for House Bill 328, Bullock 12306 as working document.
Hearing no objections, CS is adopted. Mr. Sponsor, good morning. Tell us the great things you did here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Representative Seaton, House District 35. This CS was prepared to address the two areas of concern that the Fisheries Committee brought up. The first was a portion of municipal wastewater facilities, and that's addressed in Section 1B, and that section simply adds that if a municipal wastewater facility mixing zone is authorized, it can be continued to be authorized during the useful life of the wastewater facility after the date of initial authorization. So that's in later invasion by a species. And then the second thing that we addressed was a problem on what is a spawning area, and that's in section 1C1. Yeah. And that takes and puts a definition of area for spawning area in this section of the bill, and that means the physical location where spawning occurs. And this was added so that we didn't have that problem of having a mixing zone generated in a spawning area. Spawning is defined as the time when the fish are actually in other regulations as means the process of producing, emitting, or depositing egg, sperm, seed, germ, larvae, young, juveniles, especially in large numbers by aquatic life. So under the definition of spawning, that's the time when the fish are depositing eggs, and we wanted to make sure that if you had a spawning area, that that was the physical area, was protected for all the time that the eggs and et cetera are in the gravel in the area. So those are the two changes that have been made in this CS for questions that were raised at the Fisheries Committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Let the record show Representative Salmon has joined us. Questions of the sponsor? Representative Salmon?
I have a question on the timeline of which they could do the mixing. I mean, you know, the fish spawns Then there's a certain incubation period, and that has to go from there to wherever they're going. I mean, this should be kind of the timeline, shouldn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, the regulations as they are say that you can't have mixing zones in spawning areas. And what this does is just define that a spawning area is the area, physical area where they spawn. So it will include the time while the eggs are there, because if the fish come and spawn there and deposit eggs, then you will not have a mixing zone there for the entire time. Of course, the eggs are in the ground, in the gravel, in the case of salmon, for, you know, an entire, till next year, and then the larvae come out, they hatch. And so under this bill, there will not be a mixing zone in the area where the fish spawn.
Thank you.
At any time. And, Mr. Chairman, I might add that I think that you've been provided a letter. It was actually addressed to Representative Gatto, but from the city of Palmer, supporting this bill, and that they appreciate the consideration that we've done for municipal wastewater. You also have a resolution 612 from the city of Valdez. You have a recent one from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society, and another recent one that just came in from SARDFA, Southeast Dive Association. And I believe you have some of those. I wasn't sure if they had all gotten distributed. So, thank you.
Any questions? Hearing, seeing none. Thank you, Paul, for the Representative Seaton. Is there anybody from DEC here that wants to have a fishing game, or both? State your name and affiliation.
Good morning, Representative Thomas. My name is Lynn Kent. I'm the Director of the Division of Water at Department of Environmental Conservation. We have submitted written testimony for the record and hadn't planned on adding any additional comments, but we're available here for questions if you should have them. I also provided a letter to the committee in response to questions that were asked at the last hearing that we didn't have an answer available last Friday for.
Representative Salmon?
How does the department feel on this bill?
The written testimony on the bill is in opposition to the bill, and there are specifically listed reasons for that opposition.
Any other questions, Representative Salmon?
Do you have that, the written statement? Or?
Yes, we do. Representative Thomas, you should have copies in your packet. There's both a letter and a, there are actually two letters, one that's responsive to last week's questions, and then one is that is a cover letter for this week's written testimony.
I didn't see one.
Right here, Mike. Right here. On the thin envelope, right there.
Thank you.
Any other Representative Ledoux?
Yes. Would it be fair to say that while the department feels that the bill is not necessary in light of the recent regulations, that the department sees nothing in the bill which could actually hurt either sports fishing, subsistence fishing, or commercial fishing?
Representative Thomas and Representative Ledoux, the department is opposed to the bill for multiple reasons, in part because the bill goes beyond what we feel is necessary in order to protect fish. We think that there is sound science available to us that allows us to, in certain circumstances, authorize mixing zones without having a negative impact upon fish, and that the bill goes beyond what is necessary to the point where it can actually harm economic and social development in communities.
Just to follow up, but still my question is it fair to say that the department sees nothing in the bill which would harm commercial fishing, sports fishing, or subsistence fishing?
I don't believe so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Capser.
Thank you. My question is, this bill seems to focus very heavily on salmon and commercial users. And in federal law, subsistence is the highest priority. So it seems to me that the legislature as a policymaking group, our highest priority should also be subsistence, to be in compliance with the federal law. And I know that's been a subject of much debate, but I'm wondering if by this regulation, we're trying to subvert federal intent for prioritization of resources.
Representative Thomas, I don't believe that's the case. The regulations that DEC adopted are protective of all fish species, not just of salmon, even though there seems to be a higher emphasis on protection of salmon, in particular for the economic impact that they have on Alaska. The DEC regulations rely on sound science to protect all of those other resources, and we think those regulations are sufficient to do so and do meet our mandate to protect all species of fish.
Okay. I appreciate that, and I want to point out that while salmon is of huge economic importance to the state and huge economic importance to subsistence users and filling up our freezers, so are pike and grayling and sheafish and all the other non-salmon species. We rely heavily on those in our diet, and it does redirect money that we could be spending. Out of a household's budget, the non-salmon species that we consume displaces money that we would otherwise have to spend on beef and chicken and store-bought fish.
Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any opinion on what kind of impact, if this bill was passed, it would have on the mining industry?
Yes, through the chair. Excuse me. There are, I believe 32 placer mines who operate under timing restrictions that prohibit them from discharging to avoid spawning areas, and under this bill, DEC would not be able to reauthorize those mixing zones.
So this is one industry bill, you might say.
Through the chair, absolutely not. It affects the domestic wastewater dischargers, drinking water facilities that have a wastewater discharge, as well as placer mines, and then any potential future industries that are looking for a permit and a wastewater discharge.
Any other questions? Hearing none.
Thank you.
This time we're going to take public testimony, and we'll go off nets here first, and we'll start with Norman Coring, and try to keep it fairly short so we can take...
Good morning. This is Norm Craning in Palmer. My company, Alaska Digestive Technology, has been involved in digestive sewage waste work for the last almost 4 years, although I've been involved in digestive technology for the last 8 years. Village Safe Water provided a grant for the city of Kotzebue, and we have 3 years of data. And sewage is the biggest problem that I see in our villages and our communities that are actually on moving bodies of water. We were able in Kotzebue, now this is 30 miles above the Arctic Circle, year-round use. We treat in the pipes from the farthest point from a lagoon or a treatment plant, non-pathogenic organisms are dropped in, one drop, two drops every minute or two. These non-pathogenic organisms are classified by Center for Disease Control as the safest organisms to use. They are labeled Biosafety Level 1. And we have been under constant attack from ADEC, and the data coming out of Kotzebue over the last 3-4 years has been absolutely excellent. Non-pathogenic organisms have no effect on man or the environment. They're naturally occurring in the environment. They're in the bodies of everything that swims or walks on the ocean floor. Everything that walks on Earth or flies through the air has non-pathogenic organisms to aid in digestion. We just use more of them or a formulation of several to achieve what we want to. Kotzebue had a very bad odor problem. It pumped, their lagoon was pumped every fall into the ocean. We did a trial with a grant from Village Safe Water for 4 to 6 months, and the solids in the lagoon were right up to the top. Now, there's a variance in the depth of that lagoon, but the last numbers I had were somewhere from 8 to 12 feet. In a span of 4 months, we took that lagoon from that level of 8 to 12 feet down to about 12 inches of solids. We clarified the water. We got rid of all the smell. We got rid of the grease and oil. Now, the organisms continued to work in a lagoon, washing dishes, showering, things of this sort have a tendency to kill those organisms. That's why we need a drip constantly in there to make sure the levels are high. We've given full disclosure to ADEC for, I would say, 8 to 12 times surrounding the dates that we put this in this, put this system in. When Village Safe Water looked at this system, fortunately there were some good group of people there. They realized what could happen in the state of Alaska if it was successful. They realized also this is a patented process. They realized also that Alaska Digestive Technology was the only purveyor of this technology on the west coast short of Florida, or short of California. We have the ability.
Can you,
now in Palmer and Valdez, and that we can get rid of over 80% of the solids, so you are only dealing with 20% of what you used to deal with when the system did not have the technology. Somebody was asking a question I didn't quite hear.
No, I'm saying, can you wrap up your comments and get in, are you for the bill or opposition?
All right, well, let me wrap it up this way, if you don't mind. ADEC has withheld from you the information on Kotzebue. We have scientific data and lab testing every year in Kotzebue. You've been conned, gentlemen. There is a technology out there that allows you to do a better job with sewage waste going into rivers, even though mixing zones are established. Remember, the organisms used are non-pathogenic. And when they run out of food, because they get rid of the sulfur-bearing organisms and everything else by a virtue of exclusion, they eat all the food, the other organisms die off. When they run out of food, they die off. So there's no increased level. Even if there was, wouldn't make any difference. But in regard to House Bill 328, it's very obvious that House Bill 328 has a direct effect on new development, and that's good. However, the downside of this is at the same time you're looking at House Bill 328, ADEC changed their statutes. They virtually, for any whim at all, can pull a mixing zone permit. Companies will not stick in multi-million dollars in development of mines if they know that one or two people have the ability to yank their permits. So in conclusion, I made myself available. I've done seminars for EPA, who thinks this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. They followed the effects of Kotzebue. The Canadian government, because of Kotzebue, they took Kotzebue's data. They put it in three of their villages in our last fall and are putting it in three more. It's that effective. You have a cleaner, easier way to handle sewage waste than you've ever had before. But you have not been told that by ADEC. Some people would like to build a $10 to $20 million treatment plant. This costs roughly 10,000 or less, depending on the size of the community. Could be more. Anchorage, Palmer, Wasilla would not have to change their treatment plant. They could virtually double in population. Now, I'm not going to take any more of your time.
Thank
but,
you.
Gentlemen, I think you ought to review all the statutes that ADEC changed recently that you don't have. I have been trying to get a list of those statutes and a side-by-side comparison. They won't give it to me. They won't return phone calls. And it's very difficult on any new technology if you don't have a place to go like one-stop shopping.
Thank you. Well, let's try to limit your comments to 3 minutes. Otherwise, we will be sitting on this bill if we run out of time, and I don't think that's the intent of the committee. So either we get through with everybody's testimony, or we'll be here. And we didn't schedule any meetings for next week, so just to let you know. So the next, keep your comments short. Next was Paul Barnes. Are you there? State your name and affiliation.
Yeah, my name is Paul Barnes, and I'm in Gustavus, and I'm calling today to voice my strong support for House Bill 328. I'm a commercial salmon fisherman and also consume salmon regularly throughout the year, roughly one meal a week. I'm a 35-year resident of Alaska and have always held our state's constitution in high regard. In fact, our state constitution has a constitutional mandate to protect and conserve fish resources in a sustainable manner for current and future generations. This current administration's weakening of existing mixing zone regs is a direct conflict with that mandate. When the administration proposed changes in 2004, over 2,000 Alaskans responded with 95% opposed to the rule change. Under the latest proposal, 450 Alaskans responded with the same percentage opposed. I'm not clear why anyone would attempt to change existing laws that Alaskans have held so dear and have served us so well. I know of no development that has been stopped because of the old regs. The fishing industry, salmon industry, is the state's largest and private employer, with salmon being the bulk of that. As we all know, the last 10 years have been challenging to Alaskan salmon fishermen. But these last 2 years, though, some comebacks have been made. This progress is due to no small part to the fact that Alaskan salmon are perceived as pure and our environment is clean. These proposed changes in the mixing zone regs promise to wipe out any gains we've made. Perception is very crucial with consumers. It floors me to watch this current administration attempts to add to commercial salmon fishermen's challenges. House Bill 328 is a common sense action that restores the mixing zone matter to its proper place. House Bill 328 is the right thing for Alaskans and what Alaskans want. And by the way, I focused entirely on salmon, but I wish to mention that the other fish in Alaskan streams are also very critical to the state's well-being, both economically and for subsistence. House Bill 328 also deals positively with the other important species. Thanks for this opportunity to comment.
And thank you for your comments. It came on the internet. Russ Maddock, are you there? State your name and affiliation.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, my name's Russ Maddox. I live in Seward, and I just wanted to go on the record in support of House Bill 328, and I just think mixing zones at all are a really bad idea. And the DEC approving of it and allowing pollution in the streams, it's similar to the health department allowing using your favorite stew pot for a honey bucket once in a while as long as you rinse it out. And that's the shortest way I know how to put it. But thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments.
Certainly.
Ray Sensmeyer from Yakutat, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, name and affiliation. Yes, we hear you.
My name is Ray Sensmeyer. I was born here in Yakutat 61 years ago. I'm a tribal council member of the Yakutat Tlingit tribe, also the first Grand Vice President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, both entities of which have submitted resolutions opposing mixing zones. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of streams in Alaska, upwards of which 50% have not been documented as to whether they're anadromous fish streams or not. Our fear is that once a permit is allocated to a stream and it's later found to be an anadromous fish stream, that permit will not be revoked, and if it were, perhaps that would be too late because the damage will already have been done. With the price of gold soaring, with the price of fuel soaring, and metals, there's going to be a huge, humongous increase in mining and oil and gas drilling and mining for gold as well. So this is going to affect a lot of streams. So I speak in favor of House Bill 329 because we have great concern over our salmon and the other things that we rely on and have relied on since time immemorial. So that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Kristen Smith, are you there? Name and affiliation.
Good morning. This is Kristen Smith. I'm with the Copper River Watershed Project in Cordova. And I would like to thank the committee for taking testimony and also go on record in support of House Bill 328 and note our opposition to mixing zones in fish spawning areas for on several levels. The Copper River Watershed Project is dedicated to supporting sustainable economic development in the Copper River region. I think the work we do applies to a lot of Alaska communities. And the Copper River Watershed Project represents the salmon economies of the Copper River watershed. Our region relies on a commercial fishing salmon economy, a subsistence salmon economy, and a growing sport fishing salmon economy. And I realize, too, as other people have noted, that there are other fish species that would be affected by House Bill 328, but I think salmon is probably the one of predominant concern. And our salmon economies amount to about $20 million annually on average. You know, it could be 17 million some years, it could be 25 or 28 million other years, and that's just the Copper River. This rule obviously would apply statewide and apply to areas in Southeast and apply to Bristol Bay, and I think it has huge economic implications. And it's important to maintain the salmon economies that we have and keep them all sustainable. Fish are a public resource and then should be managed for the public benefit. Allowing mixing zone pollution in public waters benefits a few, not the general public. Mixing zones must be banned from spawning areas at all times because of the harm caused by residual pollutants. I know the DEC regulations proposed allowing mixing zones on a temporal or certain times of the year, but hydrocarbons break down into several forms, and the long-term residual, here goes the science, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are the most deadly and the longest lasting. And so you can't say, well, it's okay to put pollutants in here in October and expect them not to be there in, well, so the eggs are there all winter incubating, and they're certainly going to be harmed when they hatch in March. These polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons cause reproduction malfunctions in fish. And so I think it's critical that we manage public waters for all forms of pollutants and treat spawning beds as an area, not just a point in time. I also just want to reinforce the comment that Paul Barnes made about the two rounds of comments that DEC hosted when there was overwhelming public opposition both times. And just conclude by saying that we oppose mixing zones on several levels. The science shows indisputably that pollutants harm fish. On an economic level, this would affect Alaska communities. And on a policy level, the public has spoken several times and said they do not want mixing zones, pollutants in fish spawning areas. So thank you very much for taking public testimony. And again, we're in support of House Bill 328.
Thank you for your comments. Robert Ruffner, are you on, state your name and affiliation.
Yes, my name is Robert Ruffner. I'm the executive director of the Kenai Watershed Forum in Soldotna, and we work on protecting streams across the entire Kenai Peninsula. And I just would like to say briefly that I too am in support of House Bill 328, and frankly I'm quite frustrated that I have to testify this morning because the public has weighed in on this issue twice, and I feel like there's been a fair amount of bait and switch going on here, because the reason this issue came up the first time was because they said that municipalities wouldn't be able to reauthorize their permits in certain cases. And so we've worked very hard with the municipalities on the Kenai Peninsula to make sure that a new set of regulations would go into effect that would take care of that, because it is a public entity that needed some consideration. And the cities of Homer, Soldotna, Kenai, Seward, the Kenai Peninsula Borough all passed resolutions saying that they were not in favor of this regulation change, and the governor and the state of the state speech said that, you know, he heard the public, and this was not something that was going to go forward, and now here we are, and it actually has gone forward. So I guess I'll keep my comments very short to say that I do support this bill. I think it is a step in the right direction. I think it's common sense. It protects the municipalities that really do have a legitimate problem, but also doesn't open up a whole bunch of loopholes across the state that just aren't necessary. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you, Robert. This time we'll go to Kenai, to Richard Horn. Are you there? Name and affiliation?
Yes. My name is Richard Hahn. Thank you very much for letting me testify. I reside in Soldotna, and I testified on HB 328 last week as well. Subsequently, I reviewed version L of HB 328 and find it improved over the previous version, and believe that it should be acceptable to the legislature. Having said that, I have a serious concern and a few comments. My concern is this. If the legislature is successful in passing HB 328 and its companion Senate Bill 225, would there be enough votes in the legislature to override Governor Murkowski's possible veto? I attribute my concern to Mackay Campbell's testimony last week when he said to you, paraphrased, "What would happen if these bills were not successful?" My comments are these. Alaskans should be learning lessons from industrial companies contaminating, as I speak, major rivers in China, and who pays the bills to clean them up if cleanup is even possible. Two, Alaskans should be learning lessons from the Board of Games action this week, avoiding in a one-day meeting, a 30-plus page court ruling from a judge's protracted review, which stopped the aerial killing of wolves because the Board of Game was knowingly violating its own regulations. Thus, what would prevent DEC from similarly violating its own promulgated pollution mixing zone regulations? And lastly, Alaskans should be learning lessons from the recent tragedies in West Virginia coal mines, where the mining companies simply paid the small fines for safety violations and continue to operate, killing people. Ergo, I would hope that HB 328 and Senate Bill 225 have sufficient penalties to discourage violations of banned pollution mixing zones by unscrupulous developers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have about 10 more people to go here, and so we may, if you can keep it fairly short, we'd appreciate it. Tom Bodecker?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is Tom Bodecker. I'm the city manager for City of Soldotna, and glad the opportunity to testify. I'm here testifying in support of the bill. The City Council of Soldotna has previously adopted resolutions opposing changes to allow new mixing zones in anadromous fish spawning areas, and continue to support that. We also requested that the bill or any regulations would provide an option for renewal of existing municipal wastewater permits that had been previously authorized in case fish moved in afterwards, and we appreciate the inclusion of subsection B in that. With that inclusion, we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Benjamin Jakinski?
Yes. My name is Benjamin Jakinski. I'm a third-generation set-net fisherman on Kalifonsky Beach in Cook Inlet. It is my understanding that the public has made it clear that we want to limit mixing zones in Alaska waters. House Bill 328 would make the public wishes a permanent regulation. Each year I pay a 2% tax on my fishing income to aid in fishing enhancement. It is in my best interest to keep mixing zones well regulated so that my tax investment is not wasted. Furthermore, I have been participating in the Kenai Wild Salmon Marketing Program. If the waters where the fish develop are compromised, then my product, indeed the entire Kenai Wild program, is compromised. Therefore, I believe that it is imperative that Alaska waters are kept as clean as possible. Clean water protects our fish and ensures continued marketable purity. This is especially important in light of the ever-growing menace of the farmed fish industry. If enacted, House Bill 328 would help guarantee all Alaskans top quality, healthy, and healthful fish. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go off net here to Kurt Schleb. Are you there? Name and affiliation?
Yeah, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Kurt Herslub, calling from Cordova here from my home phone. Power's out at our LIO. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I support this bill. I'm a commercial fisherman, and I'm also a member of the Cordova District Fishermen's United, although I'm testifying on my own behalf. I've opposed all the changes in mixing zones that have been proposed by the administration, and to me it's just real important to keep the purity of our environment here. The longer we hang on to it, the more valuable it's going to become just by virtue of scarcity and rarity. And I think 100 years from now, if people look back on the regressive deregulation that this administration's been pursuing, they would be seen as, and they will be seen as, foolish, short-sighted. And so I'll just keep it brief here. I support this bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Catherine Cassidy, are you here? Name and affiliation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Catherine Cassidy. I live in Kusilof. I support House Bill 328 because I object to mixing zones in general because they tend to turn into a public subsidy of industry. I ask you to think about how many billions of dollars American taxpayers have paid to clean up, mitigate, or restore the downstream results of mixing zones. Industry needs to be responsible for the full cost of their production, and this should be reflected in the consumer's cost and not in the taxpayer's cost. And mixing zones in freshwater fish streams in Alaska also jeopardize subsistence and personal use of fisheries and the tourism and commercial fishing industries. So I encourage you to hammer out the details and move this bill forward and ban mixing zones in Alaska fish streams. Thank you.
Thank you. Ban. Erica Raybush?
Thank you. My name is Eric Hibsch. I am a commercial fisherman. I also participate in the personal use and sport fisheries. I don't believe in catch and release fishing. I eat what I catch. According to the Environmental Protection Agency website, in 2004, there were 48 states that issued well over 3,000 fish advisories. These advisories alert residents to the potential health risk of eating contaminated fish. The number of fish advisories issued are rising rapidly. I have traveled all over America, and I have seen these warning signs posted along many rivers and waterways. I never want to see these signs in Alaska. I support House Bill 328 and its companion bill. I would recommend, however, that the language in these bills be strengthened to ban mixing zones in places where fish spawn or rear. In our area, salmon spawn in the Kenai River and its tributaries, but the salmon fry over winter in Skelak Lake. This vitally important rearing habitat needs the same degree of protection from contaminants. In closing, I'd like to state that I think this administration is so beholden to big industry that if the Exxon Valdez spill happened today, you could bet your ass Murkowski would declare Prince William Sound a mixing zone. Thank you.
Thank you. Paul Shadura? Are you there? Name and affiliate?
I'm here. Hello?
Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, this is Paul Shadura. I'm the executive director of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. I reside here on the Kenai Peninsula. Please reference my comments submitted January 19th to the committee, 206. The Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association is a Cook Inlet Fisheries Association. We have operated as a voice for the industry for over 50 years. Primarily a set-net organization, we do represent members who are drift fishermen, crew members, and other local businesses. We do support House Bill 328 and Senate Bill 225 at this time, though we feel the regulatory process is the preferred way. Unfortunately, DEC and DNR remains uncooperative in responding and working with the public on refining current regulations. We have requested a consistency review for other statutory and regulatory language that contradicts current mixing zone regulations and questions such regulations and statutes that might supersede. We still remain confused of the role the Department of Fish and Game has in protecting the aquatic resources for sustainability or development. And we believe the department has a limited role. We believe that this violates the public trust provisions. We would prefer a primary or equal role by the department to ensure access by the aquatic resource users. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, Offnet, for keeping the comments short so we can come into the committee room here. And we'll start with Merrill Thompson. Are you here? And come forward, state your name and affiliation. And good morning.
Morning. My name is Merle Thompson. I'm from the Susitna Valley, north of Wasilla. I was born in the territory, longtime resident. I'm representing myself. I'm a fisherman, and I eat fish. And I think to understand this whole process when you're dealing with these agencies, you have to understand the law of diminishing reality. And it's like an upside-down bottle of good wine with the cork in it. You've got your scientists and your biologists in the body of the wine bottle, which we haven't heard very much from. You've got the bottleneck, which are like your department heads at DEC and Habitat and these other places. You've got your cork in the bottle, which is the commissioners, and then you've got the placer of the cork, which is the governor. You're not going to get any of the good science out of the bottle as long as the cork is in it. I have talked to quite a number of fisheries biologists just recently, and also one of the leading specialists on chemical toxins related to mining and oil industries, and I did this at my own expense. They agree to the man and woman that this is a bad, bad idea. And listening to the testimony from the agency folks, it's kind of like when you're hunting and you come in the woods up to a spruce hen and she's got her brood. You might not see the brood, but you see the spruce hen or a ptarmigan, and she'll fake that wing broke and she'll like lead them off the path to protect her brood. Well, this seems to be what the agency is doing. They're trying to lead us off the path of what the really good science is about. And to get back to the salmon, young salmon, Dolly Varden, and trout feed at the mouth of streams. Streams run into rivers, rivers run into estuaries where they meet the ocean. All of this pollution goes downstream. Coho salmon spend their first summer feeding in estuaries before they return back upstream. Young pink and chum salmon remain in this mix of fresh and salt water, and they undergo these physiological changes there that allow them to survive in the marine environment later. So pretending like there's no change is definitely doing Alaskans a disservice. Now here's a few things that I've dug up. Hard rock mining generates more toxic waste than any other industry in the United States, and that's according to the EPA. The EPA estimates that the cost of cleaning up these metal mines could reach $54 billion. Okay, now the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, has actually chastised recently the EPA for weak federal oversight, legal loopholes, and corporate shells that compound the cost and increase the chances that mining companies can walk away from cleaning up these messes. In just in this last October, a province in the Philippines has sued the world's fifth largest gold company, that's Placer Dome out of Canada, and the charges are that they not only ruined the river, they ruined the bay and the coral reef surrounding by dumping wastes. There's all Placer Dome on three mines in Nevada, too. So the cyanide heat process, or the leach process, that you haven't heard much about, my family's been in the mining industry and the gas industry, which I'd like to talk about, too. You take cyanide, you dump it on piles of rocks, and it leaches down through and separates the gold through. There's a process that it goes through. But one of the problems with this rock that's exposed and piled up is that when it mixes with rain and oxygen, it causes a reaction. It makes sulfuric acid and from the sulfides in the gas that it reacts with it. This acid not only pollutes, but it frees up heavy metals like cadmium, lead, mercury, which are also harmful to fish, even in low concentrations. The best run mines try to reclaim this process, or reclaim this soil, or these heaps, by capping, which they dump a little lime on and they put soil over the top, and it just forestalls acid generation. It doesn't prevent it, but it's particularly bad in wet climates, and we all know that we do have wet climates around here. Cyanide can present long-term problems, according to the Geological Survey in 2000, that cyanide can convert other toxins, and particularly in cold climates. We're in a cold climate. From 1985 to 2000, more than a dozen reservoirs containing cyanide-laden mine waste collapsed, and this was according to the UN Environment Program. So just one of those, in 2000 in Romania, a mine waste spilled into a tributary of the Danube, killing more than 1,000 tons of fish, and issued a plume of cyanide that reached 1,600 miles to the Black Sea. In northeast Montana, there's the Nortman Landusky area. This was caused by Pegasus Gold, which was another company out of Canada that went bankrupt. This caused a ban in Montana. They will no longer allow cyanide leach mining, and I think this is the same process that Donlin Creek wants to do and needs this exception. I talked to Wilma Serba, and she's one of the leading experts on toxins in the environment, and she won the MacArthur Fellowship Genius Award, and I had to fly down to the States to talk with her. And she gave me a list of all the toxins that and how to test for them that are being dumped will be dumped into our rivers, and that's benzene, ethylbenzene, toluene, xylene, polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, arsenic, mercury, barium, cadmium, chromium, lead. It goes on and on, including some radioactive materials. Another thing that hasn't been mentioned is that CBM is coming into play in various regions of our state. And the processed water from this, which DEC says is perfectly safe and meets all the criterion, well, they did a test, Trout Unlimited, which is a conservative group, and they had some baseline studies of some streams down in the Rocky Mountains. Well, it turns out that this clean processed water that passed even their DEC tests wiped out 70% of the macro invertebrate populations of these streams, which caused, and that's the little critters without spines that the small fish eat to get bigger. Well, it caused a crash in the trout populations. Under the administration's plans, the gas industry can dump their waste into the river, too. Nobody's actually mentioned that because they haven't been doing it yet, but it's going to allow that to happen. And I could go on and on and on, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. I have a couple brothers that are engineers. My family's been in the business for a long, long time, and I know a good bit about it.
Thank you, Merle. Any questions? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Paula Terrell? Good morning. Name and affiliation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paula Terrell. I'm testifying on behalf of the approximately 900 members of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council in support of the CS for HB 328, and I will keep it brief. AMCC is a community-based organization of people working to protect the health and diversity of Alaska's marine ecosystems. And we have fishermen, commercial fishermen, subsistence fishermen, sport fishermen, family businesses, conservationists, et cetera, as our members. Just as an aside, my family and I have been commercial fishing in Southeast Alaska for 28 years. When I say that, it kind of scares me to think of how long we've been doing this. I'm going to just keep it brief. I think that the CS is an improvement over HB 328. I believe there is a need for the legislation because there has been so much controversy, not just this year and last year, but for a long time over what should happen with mixing zones and spawning streams and attempts to change the regs, and I think it is better placed in statute. And since we also have many subsistence harvesters as members of AMCC and on our board, and so I'm very pleased to see that the non-salmon as well as the salmon species are included. I would just add this, but I want the bill to pass out of the committee, and I don't want to hold it up, but when we when this bill gets to resources, some of the concerns about rearing habitat, which have been mentioned, I think will deserve some consideration and questions. But for now, handling this in the spawning areas is really good, and I appreciate very much. Thank you. If you have any questions.
Well, thank you. Matt Chattel, are you here, and name, affiliation?
Hello, my name is Matt Shadle. I reside in Homer, Alaska. I'm on the Homer City Council. I'm a sport fisherman, I'm a subsistence fisherman, and I've been a commercial fisherman for 22 years. I believe it's very important to support House Bill 328 and also, of course, Senate Bill 225. I'm not so worried that there's going to be any problems with passing this bill in the House. However, I have concerns about the Senate, and seeing how I get a chance to speak for the first time, my first time in Juneau, and I'm newly elected to the council in Homer, we passed a similar resolution, and it's my understanding that most of the cities on the Kenai Peninsula borough also passed the same resolution. My focus today is getting the word out to the people across Alaska that may live up in the interior but do enjoy coming down to any of the coastal communities and fishing. I think it's important that they contact people, their representatives and senators, to focus on protecting this very valuable resource. It is an election year, and good luck to everybody that doesn't support this, and I applaud those that do. Thank you.
Thank you. Donald Bremner, name and affiliation.
I don't think he's here.
Oh, he's here.
Oh, yeah.
Donald.
I brought my bulletproof jacket.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Bremner. I'm the Natural Resource Coordinator for the Southeast Alaska and Tribal Fish and Wildlife Commission. I work for you. I work on behalf of the rural communities. We basically work with protecting commercial fisheries and subsistence rights in rural Alaska here. I noticed, for our benefit, Mr. Chairman, I don't see a hooligan on this list here. It's kind of a big, vacant species that's not on here, but our concern is that in regards to the mixing zones, even though DEC says in their testimony that this bill of passed would affect streams and rivers and lakes that don't have any of these species present, but I don't see where that is in the regulation. So our concern is that if in the future, if the state allows bulk water shipments, and it's happening all around the world, that some of these streams that don't have any of these species are going to become real prime resources. So I think the bill should be expanded to protect future water resources. And it's a resource that we haven't placed a value on yet, and I think that we should. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Hearing none. Thank you, Donald. Is there anybody else in the audience wishes to testify before we close public comment? Just for the record, we did get email, I don't know if everybody got it, from SEAC in support of HB 328, and there was also a letter in front of us from the Council of Alaska Producers in opposition, since we were telling other people about other letters. So if there's no other public comment, we'll close public comment, bring it to the committee. Comments to the committee or action?
I think it's a great bill, and we ought to pass it.
Make a motion.
I move CS for House Bill 328, 24 LS1273L with attached fiscal note.
And individual recommendations?
And individual recommendations.
Hearing no objection, the bill will move from committee with individual recommendations. We are adjourned.